minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Green Bay Packers fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host today, Jacob Morley. You can find me on Twitter at Jacob Morley, and I am joined today, as always, by my co-host, Ross Uglum. And Ross, last time, I guess, we were here was really when the Aaron Rodgers news broke that he's going to be here. He's going to be in camp. We got the podium talk. We got all that stuff. And we do not need to talk about that because it has been talked about ad nauseum. But all I want to say, man, is how freaking long ago does that feel like?
Yeah, I mean, the whole, like, football thing, it just time is absolutely flying. I think COVID has kind of messed with us as far as expectations and just kind of getting back into football. It just feels like the season just ended, and having the fans back is kind of thrown off, but also it's the greatest thing ever. Like as folks know, you know, I cleared my COVID protocol to be allowed, back into the facility, not until Friday. So I spent Wednesday and Thursday of the first week of camp as a man of the people, in the bleachers with the rest of you. And actually, it had some comments from some other media members of flat out, like, we had, besides Evan Siegel with the Packers, we easily had the best photography because I had an elevated spot. I was able to take decent pictures, and it's just it's a better view from up there, man. And it was a really cool experience, like I said, to be a man of the people once again.
Yeah, that's good. Did anyone ask you about your bleacher butt?
No, but I tell you what, fun story. I met Pro Football Focus's Mike Renner's dad, and through our conversations, Ken Renner is now a Packer Report subscriber.
Hell yeah. Incredible.
Hell yeah, indeed.
That's awesome. Very cool.
And hopefully, hopefully a Pack-A-Day podcast subscriber as well.
I hope so. What's his name, Ken?
Ken, yeah, Ken Renner.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for
listening. And shout out Mike.
And shout out Mike. Mike's our dude. Yeah. All right, so speaking of, so you were there. You got to see these guys firsthand, you know, and talking about how it feels like the 2 weeks ago that Aaron Rodgers came out and said, hey, he's going to be here. It seems like a non-story. And obviously, it is not. It is not a non-story. It's going to be a story all year long. But I feel like as fans and as media and even local media and even national media has just kind of been like, we were sick of that. Everybody was sick of that. Let's move on to this team. And I think kind of what you were talking about too, with how COVID and the Rodgers stuff and everything has kind of blinded us to the fact of this team, Ross, is damn good. It is deep. This is a very deep football team. And I think with the cloud of Aaron Rodgers kind of hanging over the head, you know, with Jordan Love, I think you would hope like, oh, they could maybe make the playoffs, but you're not going to win the Super Bowl. And I'm as big of a Jordan Love fan as there is. And you're just not. Unless something, you know, completely historical happens with Jordan Love, you're just not going to win a Super Bowl with him right now as your quarterback. So Aaron Rodgers back in the fold. And then you start to say, okay, we're good there. The MVP is playing quarterback for this team. What about some of these other guys? What about some of these other players that are extremely talented in their own right? That would have carried this team if Jordan Love were the quarterback. But that's kind of the stuff that we have been seeing now in camp and some of the stories that have been starting to be written and some of the storylines that are developing, you know, the first 2 weeks of camp. These camp stories that everybody loves them, right? Some of them are fluff. A lot of them never come to fruition. But they're just fun, man. They're fun to read. It's fun to get excited about football. And I want to talk about getting excited about football, too, because I want to start this little game that we're going to play with one of the most polarizing guys in Green Bay, and that is Jordan Love. But, you know, we're going to play a little buy or sell. Are you buying stock in these guys? Are you selling in these guys? So I picked five guys that have kind of, you know, had – they've all had positive, you know, to an extent, positive types of stories throughout camp. And I just want to get your take as someone that, hey, I've been there. I've seen these guys with my very own eyeballs in entire practice. I'm not just going off of the tweets like I am. A lot of the stuff I'm going off of is tweets is from people like you that are there that are tweeting stuff. They're tweeting live, you know, clips, which a lot of that stuff we don't even get to see if you're not there. So I do want to just ask, you know, as we get into this, and I will go through these guys, but I want to start with Jordan Love, fresh off of his family night performance, that if anybody follows me, they know I probably overreact to everything good that Jordan Love does because I love him. I think he's awesome, and I'm rooting for him to be successful. But Ross, you've always been a more even-keeled guy than me. So what are your thoughts so far on Jordan Love throughout his first, we could just call it his rookie year. I mean, because essentially it is his first real training camp in Green Bay. Are you buying stock in this kid? Or are you sell?
Cautiously buy. I think, you know, he's getting what I would call like the Mahomes plus treatment. He's not getting the full Rodgers where, you know, you sit behind a Hall of Famer for 3 years and then go. But Patty and people need to kind of exit revisionist history here. People dunk, and I do because to hell with the Bears, but, you know, people dunk on Chicago all the time. Could have taken Deshaun Watson, though that star has lost a little bit of its luster for obvious reasons. And you could have taken Patty and you took Mitchell. Not a great look, but you know, you got to go back and think that was not actually a widely mocked decision immediately. Plenty of people had Mitch Trubisky as QB2. I think I might have been one of them. Actually, I think he was three behind Deshaun for me. But I think I even had him ahead of Patty. Of course, I'm a huge Carolina Tar Heels homer, so that has something to do with it. But you know, he was not widely just understood as this can't miss prospect. He just wasn't. And the year he got sitting behind Alex Smith was a big deal. Now, I would say Jordan Love is really only getting a year to sit behind Aaron Rodgers. I mean, last year, yeah, he sat behind him, but he wasn't active. He was barely getting any snaps. This is a real year, but it's a year plus. So it's the Patty plus. It's the Mahomes plus, whatever you want to call that crap that was the 2020 COVID year. He gets a COVID year and a real year to get ready, which is, you know, more than Mahomes got. And I think is a great, you know, way to transition. It's certainly, I think, more than Trey Lance is going to get. I think it's more than Justin Fields is going to get. And those are two guys that have in the ballpark of similar play styles to Jordan Love. I think I call Trey Lance a rich man's Jordan Love when people were asking me for a comp. So, cautiously buying, but like, you know, watching him in practice, it's all the same thing. Flashes of glory. Jordan Love's highs are like Mahomes and Rodgers' highs. He has an unbelievable arm talent and kind of a psychotic, as you saw, forcing the ball into double coverage into a perfect window in family night, like kind of a psychotic way of trying to get there. And that's probably why he led the country in interceptions as a junior. But you're just seeing those highs and lows, man. I mean, he's inconsistent, but the highs are amazing. And hopefully, you know, Rodgers and Hackett and LaFleur and that whole staff offensively, Getsy, I believe, is now the quarterback's coach. Hopefully that amount of support is going to do more for him than, you know, what they had at Utah State. And that's one thing I've always tried to point out. And, you know, we live in kind of Minnesota Golden Gopher territory, or at least you're from here and I live here. Mike Sanford is the kiss of death. People thought Mitch Leidner, holy cow, there's a blast from the past. People thought that Tanner Morgan was a legitimate NFL prospect after, you know, his sophomore season as well. And he has been terrible since Mike Sanford got to Minnesota. Jordan Love took a significant step back when Mike Sanford got to Utah State. That guy might be the kiss of death. I don't know. It's tough to tell.
It is. And with Love, I think It is tough because, yes, he did lead the – he led the country in interceptions, and he still does put the ball in harm's way too much. And he still has the – he has the wows on both sides where you go, wow, the family night throw. And then you have – he'll have other plays where you go, wow.
Airmail Aaron Jones right into Ty Summers' arms, and you're like, what just happened?
Right. And so it's just mitigating that. And I brought up the Mahomes comparison to Love a few episodes ago and got a few people that were like, dude, F you, you're an idiot, Jake. and rightfully so, I am. But I wasn't comparing him.
I'm not comparing Jordan. I mean,
that's the point I'm making, Ross, is like, yeah, we're not saying he is going to be Patrick Mahomes, or even looking back, are they, you know, I don't think he's as talented as Patrick Mahomes. He's which nobody really is, but he's close. But you look at the process, very similar. You know, that's all it is. You look at play style, very similar, and how they're getting. And so, like, it's easy to draw those parallels. Will the Packers have the same results? If he can mitigate the ugliness, they're going to get close.
Yeah,
and I think that's what's exciting is I think we are seeing that more and more than we even did his junior year at Utah State. His junior year at Utah State was not very good. People want to talk about the highs and lows. There actually wasn't a lot of highs. There was like a throw or two a game that you're like, okay, he's still in there, but it just wasn't very good. You have to go back to the sophomore tape where you look at him and say, this guy's a dude. And so if they can get that out of him, I think they're gonna hit it out of the park. And last thing on Jordan Love before we move on, because I think we could spend the whole episode talking about him. Sure. We're already 12 minutes in. But don't hate on people getting excited about Jordan Love. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I usually don't respond to people that tweet annoying things at me on Twitter. But people were just like, dude, it's practice. It's practice. If you love being miserable, if you root for guys to suck, go root for the Lions, because you're gonna be right a lot. This team sucks. Yeah, probably. You know what though? The Green Bay Packers are really freaking good at what they do, and don't lose sight of that. They made crash and burn with Jordan Love. That is not lost on me. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt as a team over the last 30 years that has put together a very relevant and competitive football team. Oh, they've only won 2 Super Bowls. There are about 27 teams that would die to have 2 Super Bowls in 30 years of success in the NFL. So, entitled town, it's okay to root for young players' success. Okay, rant over. Jordan Love combo over. We're going to move on from him. Buy or sell, Ross. Next guy I'm going to bring up is another really young, exciting player. The next two guys are from the same draft class. Darnell Savage, all-pro season inbound. Buy or sell?
I'm going to sell that one. I love Darnell. I think he's going to be a really good player. And this would normally be the year for a jump, I think, if I trusted Joe Barry, which I don't at this point. But I just think they're going to put a lot on his plate. I think he's going to play some slot. I think he's going to play some free safety. And I think that might screw with his development a little bit. I think he's going to be great. But we're talking all pro. We're talking about one of the best 4 safeties in the league,
yep,
right?
Yep. Yeah, field-tilting all pro player.
I'm selling that. I think there may be a day. I really do. I think there may be a day. I just don't think it's year 3. He's a young kid, as most of Packers' first-round picks are. He was a young kid. I think maybe when he's 24, 25, 26, we can have this conversation. I'm going to do some – this is great for audio. He is 24 right now, okay? So he turned 24 last week, 2 weeks ago. So – you know, 25, 26, 27 is usually prime, you know, for a football player in general. Second contract is considered your prime usually. So, yeah, I think maybe during his second contract we might see an all-pro season. But this year, while I think he's going to have a very good year, I think that Barry might put so much on his plate that you're going to see some thinking and maybe not so much reacting, and that he's, you know, kind of going to be maybe the jack of all trades, master of none. I still think we'll get an above average season, but you know, you got Adrian Amos obviously still in the league. Justin Simmons still in the league. You've got James or you know John Johnson the third who just moved to Cleveland. He's going to be part of a very exciting safety duo there. I still love Harrison Smith in Minnesota. There's a lot of really good safeties out there. You know, and depending on how you classify Tyron too, I just think this year not the year for that. I'm gonna sell that.
Yeah, that's fair. And anytime that's a safe bet too, because you're banking on someone doing something that's really hard.
Yeah,
so that's a safe bet. And I like how you kind of laid it out, because I think he's going to be a good player. I think, you know, if you can get the last 6 weeks out of him, and if you can span that over 17 weeks, you're talking maybe an all-pro.
Right, which is why I hope I'm wrong, but it's almost like I wish they would have done – this is a different defense. They're going to ask the nickel to do very different stuff, and all returns this fall or this summer have been Chandon, A1, awesome. Everybody's talking Chandon. And that's fine. But I would have liked to see them invest more in the nickel position than just Shamarjon Charles. And so I guess what I'm getting to is, like, I would have loved – and I love Savage as a nickel corner and as – that honey badger spot. And I think ultimately using his versatility is going to lead to better things next year or the year after that. But if just for this season, like for a Super Bowl run, man, I would have been like, just leave him a free safety. Just like he was there as a free safety. He was there for the last 6 weeks of the season. One of the better safeties in the game. And now it's like, hey, that was really cool. We're going to put a whole bunch of other stuff on your plate now, if that's all right with you.
It's honestly, it's the, you talk about process. It's the Nick Collins process and how he, you know, his rookie second year, you're like, wow, this guy's a stud. And then they put a ton on his plate. And then people are like, oh dude, should he play corner? You know, people forget that, like, his development was really weird. And then all of a sudden it was just like, whoa, like, okay, that's why they put that all on his plate. It's clicking, you know? So Savage could be the same way. And speaking of clicking, this is an interesting guy. I mentioned earlier, same draft class. People, whenever basically anyone says that now, you know we're talking about Darnell Savage and Rashawn Gary. Yep. Rashawn, it seems to me, and I love Rashawn Gary. I've admitted multiple times. I think I'm already way wrong on Rashawn Gary on my evaluation of him coming out. And I want to be careful how I say this. He hasn't done it yet.
Yeah. No,
you know what I mean? I know. And I get that people are excited about him, and I get the same vibes that people did with Za'Darius Smith when he was in his first year as a Packer. People are just like, he's going to be a star. He's good. And people are talking the same way about Rashawn right now, which is awesome. I'm super stoked about that. But I want to ask you, Ross, buy or sell Rashawn Gary, being that, I mean, as Mike Smith called him yesterday, the leader of this defense. And I mean, we're talking, in my mind, what I'm hearing about him is I'm thinking 12 to 15 sacks for him this year. By yourself. I mean, is that fair to think? I mean, am I overthinking how much people are excited about him?
You're not overthinking it. I mean, man, just from being around the program, being around the team that week, like, people, oof, man, they're – and look – what do we say? And I always preface this like this. I loved Brian Burns. I was right about Brian Burns. Them taking Brian Burns over Rashawn Gary might even end up being right. But I was also right. And so when they took a guy I didn't like and I didn't hate, he ended up 30th overall for me in that class. Now, they took him at 12. But it's not like I ranked the guy 60th. He had a firm first round grade for me. And when we, as we do, when the Packers take somebody, you know, for the good of the fan base and for the good of mental health, I guess, especially, you know, how much we pour into the draft, you start talking yourself into it and explaining to yourself and explaining to the listeners why it could work. What did we say? The young man basically has the highest ceiling of any edge rusher ever. From a strictly athletic standpoint, This is the biggest, strongest, fastest MF that ever walked the earth. He is a 10 RAS guy. He is a freak. Agility, speed, strength, explosion. He's a freak. Now, that didn't translate at Michigan. It just didn't. It didn't. To on-field production, it didn't. Because if it would have, he would have been pick 1-1 or pick 1-2. Five-star, number one overall recruit in the country. If he produces at Michigan, you bet your ass he would have been drafted like a Bosa. I promise you that. But Mike Smith, the scouting department at Green Bay, maybe asking him to do something a little bit different than he was asked to do at Michigan, which shame on Michigan. But ultimately, it looks like they were right. You're right, though, in that he hasn't done it yet. Again, these guys are not the gospel at PFF, but edge rushers last year, Gary, of guys that played 50% of their team snaps, he was not a top 50 edge rusher. I think over second half of the season, he was actually really high, but over the course of the entire season, he was not a top 50 guy for them, for Pro Football Focus at edge. So this is a guy that just, you know, certainly has the ability, but you're 100% correct. It's not on film and it's not in the stats yet. Everybody thinks it's going to happen. The coaches think it's going to happen. The fans think it's going to happen. A number of people who hated the pick think it's going to happen. But it hasn't actually happened. And that's a great point that you bring up, because people are acting like, oh, man, all those Gary haters got to eat crow now. They will likely have to eat crow. Not yet. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Yep. I'm buying him though. And for the record, I'm buying.
That's fine.
I think last year I said, can Rashawn Gary?
And get I don't eight, even. Eight by the way, sacks? I don't even think I even gave you an answer. I'm buying it too. I didn't give you an answer. I kind of responded to you saying that it hasn't happened yet, and trying to kind of walk our way through that. I'm buying it too. I think this is year three. Is usually huge for edge rushers, just from a progression standpoint. Year three is also big for wide receivers, but I've found with edge rushers, it's a big jumping off point a lot. And he looks ready. He looks thinned out. Besides Elton Jenkins, who is unreal, but besides Elton Jenkins, people are having a hard time staying in front of that kid. He's something.
Well, you kind of just answered my next question, and that is Elton Jenkins at left tackle. You buying or selling it?
Buying. I mean, selling, because eventually he won't, but buying.
Can he play there?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I just and honestly, too, like with what they've done in the draft, even though Stepaniak retired, I guess, which is kind of wild, but – they view Runyon as an interior guy. I think he's one of their best five. I think Runyon will be one of their best five even when Bach returns. But the investments that you've made have been mostly guys you figure will be an interior. Josh Myers, Jake Hansen, John Runyon Jr. And then I think they took another guy
Royce.
After Myers. Royce, yeah. I think they, I think, are holding out hope for Royce at right tackle as well. I don't think they're shoehorning him in to guard. But most of the investments that you've made, you know, are interior. So it makes sense. I know that they went with Wagner, and now they've got Dennis Kelly, who's, I think, Wagner plus is how I kind of describe him. But ultimately, your best options that you've seen a ton of, because you haven't seen a ton of Dennis Kelly, your best options that you know about, that you have practice tape on, you have, you know, game for a guy like Runyon, game reps, Lucas Patrick, you have a zillion game reps of Lucas Patrick to kind of comb over. I think you feel like your best use of Billy Turner is outside. And right now, you also feel like your best use of Elgton Jenkins is outside. And ultimately, you know, left tackle is the most important position on the offensive line. And so putting your best player there, I think, makes a lot of sense. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think if I had a gun to my head, I think right away, at least, it'll be – sadly, I think it'll be Bach, Elgton, Myers, Patrick, Turner when everybody's healthy again, which I would not do. I would find a way to not have to use Lucas Patrick, whether that's Dennis Kelly at right tackle and Billy Turner at right guard, or whether it's just straight up John Runyon at right guard. But I think that – go ahead.
I was good. I think we could have just done a whole show on the offensive line because there's so many different scenarios that are and it's fascinating. And it's a great problem to have. You know, there are so many teams that are sitting there thinking, how do we end up string together five guys that can play?
Yeah.
The Packers are thinking, how can we string together our best five? And we're gonna have two or three guys on the bench that we really like, that we really think can play. And so it's kind of finding that mesh point of what works best. And I think the most interesting thing is Billy was much better at right tackle than he was at guard. And so it's kind of that balance of like, okay, you have a really good right tackle in Billy Turner. Do you kick him in to guard and just say, hey, Elgton, you're our right tackle of the future? I think that's – if that's not obvious to everyone, it probably should be. Like, I think Elgton is going to be the – when he gets his second contract, it will be as a tackle for this football team.
And I think – as like for the 2021 season, specifically pass blocking, I think your best five are Bakhtiari, Dennis Kelly, Billy Turner, and then Elgton and Myers. And so how that would work out would be left to right, Bach, Elgton, Myers, Turner, Kelly, because Kelly's like 6'8". You're not gonna kick him inside the guard. He's a tackle. He's a tackle body. He's a tackle. I think that's your best five. I think the Packers want to use Dennis Kelly as a swing tackle, unless he just blows everyone away in preseason and in camp, and it's just slapping Stanovich in the face. I am one of your best five. I am one of your best five. I am one of your best five. I really think they want to use him as insurance against Bakhtiari's injuries, whatever, you know. But you're right. I mean, to this point, Billy Turner's best football as a Packer has been as a tackle.
Yeah. And then you just wonder, it was the guard stuff that, and he didn't struggle at guard. Like, he didn't struggle. He was fine. But I think he was above average as a tackle. And so it's just tough. And it will be interesting to see what they do. We can speculate all day about it. And it seems like every practice they open with a new different five, which they should be. You know, they should be getting that stuff sorted out now. It'll be wild. My last question for you is kind of the camp darling who now is out with a shoulder injury. So this may be all for naught if this is a bigger injury than it appears on the surface. But Juwan Winfrey, the wide receiver out of Colorado. What are you buying or selling the hype on this kid as your sixth wide receiver?
I'm selling, I think. I mean, I think he's probably practice squad. I want to just, you know, I've been very public on Twitter. Like, what Devin Funchess just said was completely unacceptable. You can't do it. You certainly can't do it. And then make, you know, the motion that he did with his fingers by his eyes. And it was blatantly racist. And if you disagree with that, feel free to unfollow. Feel free to not worry about, you know, what I got going on, because I have no time for that. What he did was completely unacceptable. All that said, they've made it clear that they're not going to release him based on that. And I think that's fair. I mean, the way that he said it to me, the way it just kind of slipped off the tongue was ignorance instead of hate. And that's unacceptable, certainly. But I don't think he was making a joke at anybody's expense. I think it was kind of, and it's a sad state of affairs, but I think it was just kind of vernacular for him, just kind of part of like the way he talks, and it's unacceptable, but it's not something they're going to release him over, and I'm fine with that. So if you've made that decision that that's not why you're going to release Devin Funchess, then the on the field product is, you know, why you're going to choose to do that. And I think ultimately, especially with that Sternberger roster piece being able to be saved on the suspended list, I would roll with seven. But I think Malik Taylor's position on special teams, I think, really locks him into that spot. Mm-hmm. And then I would, you know, for me, it's obviously Devontae. Randall's a lock, or the quarterback's going to quit. You know, yeah. Devontae, Randall, that's two. MVS is three. Lazard is four. Amari Rodgers ain't getting cut. That's five. Yeah. And then I think your sixth is Funchess, and your seventh is the special teamer. And unless Winfrey can kick Taylor's ass at special teams, it's going to be Malik Taylor. I understand that Funchess doesn't have team's ability, but man, like, he's something else. And I know that from a body type perspective, people just think, well, he's duplicated by Alan Lazard. They do the same. They don't do the same stuff. Like, watch them play. Funchess is smoother athletically. Alan Lazard is more physical. He is very much a third down possession receiver, which is fine. Those have tremendous value. Watch Alan Lazard's tape, man. Watch him work the sideline. Watch the very limited film that's available from when he was an Indianapolis Colt. He is a veteran, professional wide receiver. This is someone with a 700 or 800 yard season under his belt with multiple touchdowns. You talk about, look, I don't think, you know, he's a massive upgrade or is going to set the world on fire, but this is a guy who in 2017, and by the way, he's 27. You talk about prime years. This guy is not washed, as the kids say. He is not past his prime. This man is 27 years old, and he won't turn 28 until next May. He is freshly 27. This is a guy with a 63 catch, 840 yard, and 8 touchdown season. No one not named Randall Cobb or Devontae Adams has a season like that. Not MVS, not Lazard, not EQ, not anybody has actually done that on a professional stage. If it were me and I'm quote unquote all in and I'm trying to win a Super Bowl, I am rolling the dice with Devin Funchess instead of this lottery ticket that's Juwan Winfrey. And honestly, we've seen it a million times. I mean, I can go back and think of, I don't know how many, you know, darling Packers receivers, for you know, that last guy in camp, Mr. Nitschke Field has a million times been a receiver, and that's fine. I mean, I get it, but man, even a guy like Miles White, people mm-hmm. loved Miles White, DeAndre Burrell, people loved that kid. And
who's the big guy from South Carolina?
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about. We can't cut this guy. Can't cut this guy.
Yeah, because he was you know, he's so big and so impressive. Jared Boykin even comes to mind, yeah. And he, you know, but like again and again, Torrey Gurley. You can't cut Torrey Gurley.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and the only guy that's ever gone on to have any semblance of success is Charles Johnson, who was a draft pick who went on to have like one decent season with
Minnesota. But then he was never to be heard from again. And
right.
And that's what I'm kind of just, I want to not be an ass and not, you know, not kind of rain on everybody's parade, but I just want to remind people that like these wide receiver camp darlings, that folks, even my guy Darius Shepherd, like sadly, the same thing. These guys that just wow in camp and you're like, holy S, they can't cut him. Has it ever hit? You know, besides, I guess, Donald Driver, it's a sparse crowd. I mean, the quarterback obviously thinks that Kumerow is still a Packers Hall of Famer, but it just I don't want to be holding the Juwan Winfrey lottery ticket if Devin Funchess can be a professional real wide receiver.
Yeah, two things before we get going. Like, I think you're right, and that's what I was going to say, is every year there's a guy that's like, can't cut him, he won't make it to the practice squad. Yeah, he will. Every team, every podcast has a Juwan Winfrey guy that they're talking about that they're like, we can't cut this guy. So it's whatever. And then the last thing is I wrote down all the guys, all the wide receivers in front of me, and I look at Funchess and I say, man, I could see this guy not making the team. I could see this guy being the Packers' number two wide receiver statistically at the end of the season. And I think the upside of the fact of the matter is he did those numbers with Cam Newton throwing him the ball, which Cam Newton's a good football player. He's a good NFL quarterback. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Aaron Rodgers playing in Matt LaFleur's system. So I think he's going to ultimately be a Packer this year, and he's going to contribute. But we will find out. Time will tell. And we'll be here to kind of get what you guys do that every step of the way. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back in a couple weeks after we got a preseason game under our belt, and we're halfway through the preseason, kind of get some of those takes off and all that good stuff, that stuff that we love. We love to be fans and cheer for that stuff. Preseason is a heck of a time. It's a heck of a drug sometimes. So it'll be fun. We'll be here for it. And I think next Saturday is when we got a Green Bay Packers football game. So that'll be a lot of fun. But until then, and until next time when Ross and I are back, thank you guys again so much for listening. And as always, go Pack, go.